We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. Thank y'all so much for joining me for this episode today. And joining me to talk about the Royals on this episode is Marcus Mead. He hosts the Royals Weekly podcast and has done some stuff for us over at Royals Farm Report in the past as well. Still dabbles in some writing for us currently as well. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty good. I mean, I'm living a decent life, but the Royals are not helping in any way. So, you know, that is what it is.
It is tough sledding trying to make content for the worst team in baseball right now.
I wonder sometimes what it's like to try and make content for the best team in baseball. Like, what are you just spoiled for riches? Do you just have all day to talk about whatever you want? I don't get it. Like,
I dabble and listen to national baseball stuff for the most part outside of doing this. And over at John Boy Media, Jerry Blevins and Jolly Olive doing the Shea Station podcast. They're just loving life right now, talking about the Mets. I'm like, or the talking Yanks guys talking about that. I'm like, man, what would that be like? What's that like to not have to talk about a team that's 16-33 as it sits today?
Would the Mets go like 6-0 on their recent homestand? I think they were undefeated.
Like that. Yeah, I think they're.
We'll get there one day.
The best record or close to the best record in baseball with the other team in New York. So. Is what it is.
It's all right to like baseball in New York these days.
No kidding. Well, if nothing else, we're not going to sit and be not going to air the grievances the way that the Royals Farm Report show did the other day. That is its own separate show. We don't need to do that twice in 1 week. Before we get into today's episode, it's always brought to you by Kansas City Strength and Conditioning. Let's hear a quick word from the
Tucks. In the beginning, we knew right away that we wanted to do strength conditioning and a throwing program for the baseball and softball community. It wasn't something we were trying to back into or all of a sudden learn. We knew we were really good at these coaching these skills from the get-go. And the fact that we're in the same business and the employees are all on the same page, you know, we can write a program based off of what a kid needs, not just getting him stronger or faster from a general sense. It's what does this kid need? On the pitching end, we can say, hey, this kid needs such and such. He needs to do this or that better. A lot of times it turns out it's not something that needs to be fixed in the baseball cage or on the throwing mound. It actually needs to be fixed in the weight room.
Thank you, as always, to Kansas City Strength and Conditioning for sponsoring this show. Be sure to go check them out if you have a baseball or softball player in the area that needs a place to train. Marcus, so I want to start here, and this is probably the most pessimistic I think we'll be on this episode, but you had a tweet earlier this week that kind of rung true with at least where I feel about where the season has gone. And I think we're kind of in lockstep with how we feel. Like, I didn't generally have super high expectations for this season. I thought there could be steps forward, but I didn't think they were going to be like hovering around 500 or competing for that third wild card spot, something like that. I think 75 to 77 wins was kind of where I was sitting. And at this rate, it doesn't look like they're going to get close. I think they're pacing for 108 losses right now. I don't think they end up losing 100 games, but if they really do, then we're in a world of hurt for what the future of this organization looks like. But obviously Royals Twitter and social media and people are rightfully frustrated with the product on the field right now. I didn't think the Royals were going to be good, but I didn't think they were going to be worst team in baseball bad, like worse than teams that are not trying to win. You know, you're worse than the Cincinnati Reds. You're worse than the Oakland A's. You're worse than the Pittsburgh Pirates. You're worse than the Baltimore Orioles, teams that you should be better than at this point in what you consider to be year five of this rebuild that they want to say is a rebuild, but it hasn't been at all. They've tried to wade in the water of trying to compete and rebuild, which you just can't do as a small market team. They should have just completely torn it down, but they decided not to. Do you think expectations were too high?
I don't think they were too high, because you look at last year, 74 and 88, and they were telling us that they were wanting to compete this year. 74 and 88 made a lot of sense for last year because of the composition of this roster and all those sorts of things. And then you look at the composition of the roster they currently have, and I say to myself, who are these players? And I don't just mean the roster, like the 40-man roster or the roster in the major leagues. I'm talking, look at the talent up and down the organization, including the ones we think are ready to compete in Major League Baseball. Should this team be better than it is? Were they in line with our expectations? And I say, yes, my win prediction for the year was 79 and 83. I think you could put a collection of players together at the major league level on this team right now that could win you 79 games. I think it would have to be with a different coaching staff. I think it would have to be with a different, you know, front office that's willing to deploy that talent differently, because obviously some of it is in AAA right now. But I honestly think that if you had put this collection of talent with the Dodgers or the Rays or something like that, this team does play around 500 with the talent level and the experience level that they're at right now. The problem is they have this talent that just hasn't been deployed in such a way that was meant to maximize the number of wins that they would get this year. You don't play Carlos Santana. You don't play Ryan O'Hearn. You don't play these sorts of guys if you're trying to win as many games as possible. And yet for some reason, they said they were trying to win as many games as possible, and they still made those moves. Other teams don't make those moves. Other teams don't let guys like Nicky Lopez and Whit Merrifield play every single day, no matter what, when they're having the worst years of their careers offensively. And so these are just sort of things that if they existed in the Rays organization or the Cards organization or the Dodgers or the Giants, you wouldn't see happening. You also wouldn't see Whit Merrifield and Nicky Lopez and things like that struggling for the extensive period of time that they do, or the pitching struggling for the extensive periods of time that it does. You know, it's all these sorts of things that I think we were right to sort of think, okay, this is what they could be, you know, high 70s wins, competing for 500 anyway. But unfortunately, we got a whole bunch of really bad circumstances. I put out another tweet today that was like, Andrew Benintendi is one offensive player they have having the season of his career offensively. They have three having the worst seasons of their career offensively. That is a recipe for losing. And then they have Nicky Lopez, who's having the worst year of most people's career offensively. And so, you know, it's not like they bad lucked into some career worst performances, but they also just aren't managed well enough as an organizational talent pool to maximize the number of wins that they would get.
I think that's the biggest thing, is that right now we're seeing a coaching staff that cannot maximize the guys in the room right now. If they really wanted to run it back, they're essentially running it back with the roster they had last year, add in Bobby Witt and MJ Melendez.
Well, you mentioned earlier that, you know, sometimes you can't have a foot in both camps. You can't try to compete and rebuild at the same time. Well, the truth is, if you're a good enough team, small market team like the Rays, you actually can. You just have to have top-notch player development, top-notch scouting, and top-notch coaching. They don't have at least top-notch player development and top-notch coaching. The scouting we can quibble about. They are pretty respected across baseball for their scouting, and Dayton Moore is known as like a great scout and a great collector of talent. And we can point to big scouting wins for them, right? Salvador Perez is a big scouting win. Even Vinny Pasquantino is a huge scouting win to get a guy like him so deep in the draft. But player development and coaching, you cannot deny it. There is no quibbling. There is no debate over the fact that this team does not do either of those very well, and certainly not well enough for a small market team to try to compete and rebuild at the same time.
certainly feels like they've got the player development at the minor league level, at least at a point where you can get some talent there. Right. But it's the talent, it's the player development at the major league level that is severely lacking. And that's why we're seeing a 16-33 team right now that should not be 16-33. And it is that lays at the feet of JJ Piccolo, Dayton Moore, and Mike Matheny, Cal Eldred, and then prior to Alex Zumwalt, Terry Bradshaw. Like it falls on at all of their feet. Like blame should be laid across all of them, not more than the other. Right. So I think that's
makes total sense.
And so that's a lot. That's what we're seeing. And that's why I don't know. I don't think you can run it back with this coaching staff next year. If you do, then you're really telling everybody we are not trying to win. I think it's as simple as that. And I think if you get to the All-Star break and certain coaches are still on the coaching staff, you're still trying to say, yeah, we're punting to 25 and hoping that maybe then we can get things rolling then. I think that's how it feels to me, at least.
I think you're on the money, but I'm my timeline's even shorter. I don't think you can go past next week with some of the people on this coaching staff, just because every day you wait. And that's the thing, when somebody were to ask me, like, why can't the Royals win, or what's their biggest issue or something like that, it's not necessarily that they don't know what to do. It's the pace at which they do it. They move so slowly, and they think that, like, oh, our conservative mindset is actually a virtue. It's not. They don't understand the opportunity cost of what they're losing all the time. Not trading Santana last year at the halfway mark, not trading Whit Merrifield 2 or 3 years ago. All these things, not making moves is actually just as dangerous as making moves. They just don't realize that. And so not changing a coach is just as dangerous as changing a coach, right? And so the fact that they're not trading Cal Eldred, or they're not getting rid of Cal Eldred or some others, means that they're wasting opportunities for development of the pitchers that are currently on their roster. And so, bam, a year of Bobby Witt Jr. will be gone after 2022. Another year of Brady Singer will be gone after 2022, and Daniel Lynch and all these other guys. The fact is, you're wasting their service time. You're wasting their time here in Kansas City, letting them languish and not become the best that they could possibly be.
And you would think that, and I know football and baseball are very different. Player development, scouting, all of it. But we watch the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs make aggressive corrections every offseason to make the team as good as possible every single year. That's completely overhauling the defense and getting the free agents in there to change the culture. It was completely overhauling the offensive line after the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. It was bringing in new, young, cost control rookies to completely change the culture of the defense again. Over and over, we see Brett Veach make aggressive corrections to what was lacking in the team the previous season to make them better the next year. And we see, you mentioned the slowness and the conservatism to make these changes, and that's why the Royals are having the struggles they are right now. You have to be aggressive in any line of work in the business of sports. And I understand, and I think and Alex and I have talked about this before, the Royals do so many things well. It's the little things that they do wrong that are the most detrimental at this point. I understand treating your people well. I understand instilling a culture that they have. Like, I get it. But at a certain point, you have to have a business mindset to win and to be aggressive to win games, because fans aren't going to sit around for another 30 years and let this happen. They're just not. They had that taste of it, and it's not going to go away. People will, like, attendance is going to plummet if by next week we're still watching the same roster. I think it's that easy. I will be very curious to see what attendance is going to be like on this 10-game homestand coming up.
Oh, yeah. I think that's going to be a big indicator for them. I think they're going to be very curious to see what attendance is like on this 10-game homestand. And you're absolutely right. And when I think about the slowness, and I don't like it when people are like, Dayton Moore can't do anything, because that's just not true. He does certain things well. That is undeniably true. You don't have an organization with this much talent in it if he doesn't do some things well. The problem is, the things he doesn't do well are very big picture things. Like, he doesn't put the right people in place to manage certain things in the organization, right? He didn't have the right people in place at the top end of the hitting and pitching spectrum pitching developments for a really long time. And it's like, yes, now the hitting is better. Yes, the pitching looks a little bit better in the minor leagues and is maybe getting, we'll see what happens at the major leagues. But these are decisions that could have been made much, much sooner. There's actually this great book I like to bring up when people talk about management and these sorts of things. It's a book called The Generals. It's by a writer named Thomas Ricks. It's about military leadership from World War II to today. And the idea was that they're praising these types of generals in the military who would actually move on very quickly from people they realized were not capable of doing the job that they needed to do because the stakes were so high, right? Like people's lives are on the line, that sort of thing. And what you end up finding is that if you move on quickly from guys who clearly can't do the job, a couple of things happen. One, you very quickly get to the right guy for the job. You very quickly get to the person who is going to do well in that situation. And the other thing happens is the people who get moved around or demoted or whatever, or fired, they end up learning from that and they end up finding other jobs elsewhere or other that you move them into other positions and they do better, right? It's not like that, will we fire Cal Eldred? He's doomed for eternity. No, the guy is going to be fine. He learned from this experience. He's already a millionaire, but he learned from this experience. He's going to go out and he's going to find other work elsewhere. And if he's good at learning, he will do a much better job in his next appointment or post. But I just think it's important that we have this mentality that results matter more than anything. Alex talks often about loyalty to the other players on the team as exactly. Questioning like the loyalty to players and things like that. I always think of it in terms of loyalty to the fan base. That is your number one loyalty. They pay everyone's salary. They make the team exist. And without that, you're in trouble, right? And they're going to find that out maybe on this 10-game homestand. So be loyal to the fans, make decisions that are in the best interest of winning. That's what everybody needs to be loyal to in the professional ranks.
You're absolutely right. And I don't want to dwell on this for too long because we could sound like a broken record over the next 4 months talking about this sort of topic in various stages. So I'll move on from that. But I think that was a good jumping off point for the show. But I want to try and be as positive as I possibly can and understand this. Like, I'm not trying to sunshine pump for this team. There's no reason to. But at a certain point, it's such a long season. Like, there's no reason for me to sit here and be a broken record for 4 months talking about how awful everything is. It doesn't do me any good. It doesn't do you guys any good. So I'm not going to do that. I do want to talk a little bit about the bright spot on this team right now has been the young guys for various reasons. I think Bobby, I know his last couple of games, the Cleveland series, he didn't do great. The Minnesota series prior to that, back-to-back three-hit games, he looked as locked in as I've seen him in those games. So I think he's coming around nicely. I think there is a little bit of pressure on him right now, putting him in the three hole. Someone posted this at today, and I wish I could see it. I wish I could say who it was, but I don't remember it off the top of my head, of Bobby in games the Royals have won versus games they've lost. He's hitting over 300 with a weighted runs created plus around like 140 in games they've won, and hitting below 200 with like a 70 in games they've lost. But that's also just some of being a young player in baseball, but I think he's still playing lights out defense, moving over to his natural position at shortstop too. So there's a lot to like with what I've seen from him still.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like if you look at the bigger picture, and that's what's interesting. I went on that airing of grievances with Alex the other day, and I thought to my, and I sort of felt weird stepping into that moment and talking about things that are sort of more positive, but I look at this team often with such a big picture lens that it's hard for me to like hang on any one loss or anything because I'm seeing all these positive markers out there with the team. Yes. Bobby Witt Jr. is a positive marker. MJ Melendez is a positive marker. Don't forget that these guys could come up and be struggling a lot more than they are.
Oh yeah.
In other organizations, some guys are having a terrible time making this transition from AAA to the majors. Bobby Witt Jr. looks like he's handling it fairly well, making big strides all the time. MJ Melendez looks super comfortable in Major League Baseball right now. He's doing great. You know, Emmanuel Rivera, we get this big surprise, comes out and is playing better than anybody expected him to play at third base. Looks like he can be a real, and nothing else, a bench piece for the Royals moving forward. You know, there are a lot of real positives if you're looking at the markers of who are the group of guys who are going to be on the next competitive Royals team. I never expected Carlos Santana to be on the next competitive right. Royals team. I really didn't expect Whit Merrifield to be on the next competitive Royals team, honestly, because I thought he should have been traded 2 or 3 years ago. Bingo. So, you know, and we knew he'd be in decline at this point. He's 33 years old or something like that. And so look at the guys who we are going to be counting on to win us the next, or to put us at least in the next playoff race. They're all the ones carrying the team right now. They're playing well. And then we have guys like Vinny Pasquantino and Nick Prado excelling so much in AAA, you have to be actually sort of point to the guys. If you would have said before, create a roster of guys before the season who you think are going to be here for the next competitive Royals team. If I looked at that roster's Fangraphs page, it would look incredible, honestly. Like, it would look really, really good. It wouldn't be a full team because they still have some holes to plug before they get to that point. We've got to see if Michael Massey will come up, see what Edward Olivares is when he gets a little bit more playing time and that sort of thing. But ultimately, I'm looking at for pieces. All I'm looking for is pieces. And if I look around the Royals right now, I actually see a lot of really viable pieces for the future.
Oh, by far. And I'm so impressed with MJ, man. He just acts like he's a pro's pro. He really is. And he puts together the best at bats on the team. He's not overextending. He's not striking out as much as I thought he would. I think it's still right around 22%, which is perfectly manageable for a guy like him that can get to his power, still work a lot of counts. He's walking right around 10%, 11%, which is good and perfectly fine for me. And I think that'll continue to go up as he gets more comfortable. Emmanuel Rivera is a great guy. I didn't even really think about him when I put together the rundown. Someone mentioned him yesterday. I mean, he had an absolute tank the other night. And I don't know what his long-term prospects are, but if nothing else, the fact that you can put that guy on your bench and send him out there at third base against lefties, at the very least, during a pinch, you can play him every day like the Royals have right now. I couldn't be more impressed with what I've seen from him. Now, granted, my expectations for him were very low, but he's exceeding whatever expectations I did have. So he deserves a lot of credit for coming in and just doing the job. And at that point, you know, he's not a black hole in the lineup, which there are certainly plenty that we have seen so far this year, and he's not one of them. Kyle Isbell's coming off the injured list. I don't know if it was considered the COVID IL or what, but he whenever he gets back to 100%, he's going to be just fine. Once he started to get everyday run in the lineup, he was really good. Prior to that IL stint, he's hitting the ball as hard as anybody. He's playing a great right field. You can stick him in center at a pinch. He's not great out there, but you can do it. Certainly a guy that can fill in that 6-7 spot in the lineup and be really effective. Now, and then to the pitching side, Brady Singer is a completely different guy. Completely different. It's amazing what a third pitch does for him, but he looks more confident than I've ever seen him out there. Normally when he gets a couple of those, he doesn't induce a ton of hard contact. It's normally a lot of like weak stuff. And we saw some of that against the Twins, but when he had guys on or, you know, a couple of those dink and dunk hits strung together, normally it just completely unravels for him. And that's when the outing goes to shit. Basically, he didn't allow that to affect him. And he was able to get out of those innings clean. And I don't think you can ask for much more than that from him. I think it's a lot of the between the ears stuff for him that is starting to clean up, as well as incorporating that change up a little more. He's punching guys out. I mean, it's awesome. He's becoming the pitcher that I think we all expected him to be. It took a little bit of time, but it takes a lot of time. It takes time for some guys. And it seems like he's really coming into his own and certainly becoming the guy that we all think he can be in Kansas City.
Yeah, and the weird and optimistic thing for me is we haven't even seen the best version of that changeup, because I saw it once in AAA. I saw a game in AAA where that changeup looked like a major league average changeup, and he was untouchable in that game. It was incredible. It was like, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, this could be a consistently mid-3 RA pitcher in the major leagues, no problem. Because if he can throw that changeup, it's a whole different ballgame for him. Oh, yeah. Right now, he's using it strategically, I think, and that's the smart way to use it right now, because it's not consistently a 50-grade pitch. But he's getting that weak contact. He's giving guys different looks, and it's making his fastball and slider more effective, which is great. But if it takes that next step, if it becomes consistently a 50-grade pitch, then you have a front-end starter maybe out of Brady Singer. And if he cleans up that stuff you were talking about between the ears, the sort of situational imploding that he has done in the past, where he's just, you know, a much more calm and cool pitcher out there, I think you're talking about a guy who with the type of potential that we all thought he would have moving forward. And it's going to be present. Now, you can't blame him entirely for the fact that they were unable to teach him or encourage him to throw that changeup in the minor leagues, for the fact that that's what will always get me, is like, how do you promote a guy to be a starter when he only has two pitches? Like, how do you do that? Like,
yeah,
they did it. And a lot of people were like, hey, yeah, great. He's effective. Yeah, great. And yeah, I mean, maybe, but we should have always all known, like, this wasn't going to last and this wasn't going to work out until he had quit, because he's not Randy Johnson. They're good pitches. The fastball and slider are good pitches. They're not Randy Johnson's fastball and slider. So you're not going to have be a two pitch starter. It's just not going to happen. And so, but it's so great to see him turn that corner develop, have that change up with him. And it's just a fun watch now. He is really fun to watch as a pitcher. The rest of the rotation looks like it's rounding out a little bit too. I'm really liking your boy Heasley. He is like Mike. It's a good thing you don't have Mike on this podcast right now, because he's my co-host and brother. For those of you who don't know, he would just be talking your ear off about John Heasley, because he's like his favorite pitcher on earth at this point. And so I love what he's doing. I put out a tweet thread about him today. His curveball is among the best in baseball.
Yep.
People don't know that. It's among the best. His fastball is among the best in baseball. If you look at like movement metrics and things like that, his fastball is among the best in baseball. And so it's one of those things where when he develops enough confidence in his stuff to live more in the zone, he is going to look very much like a solid back end guy that we've kind of wanted, guy who keeps us in ball games all the time. It's going to be great. I'm excited for John Heasley.
He's still keeping the Royals in games despite the walk numbers that he hasn't shown in the minor leagues at all. And I think some of that is just, like you talk about, the comfortability, the nerves of, he's only made like, what, five big league starts, five, six. I think he's going to be just fine. And obviously Heasley's my dude and I love the guy. And I think the world of him. And I know that he's going to be if nothing else, a really good reliever in the big leagues. And I think he's shown that from when he was at Oklahoma State, that's at least his floor. And if that's your floor, then shoot, you're going to be just fine in the big leagues. You can make a really nice career out of that. And he's showing, at least right now, that I think he can stick in the rotation. He's showing more than I ever thought he could, certainly.
Oh, yeah, I think he's definitely capable of sticking in the rotation. I also think that he is showing us, and Singer is showing us as well, and maybe the org should take this to heart as a philosophy, the advantages to throwing more pitches. The more pitches you throw, the better. As long as they're quality enough to be in the major leagues, the more pitches you throw, the better. Yep. Heasley probably has four league average pitches on most days. I'd say occasionally his fastball and curveball get up to what I would call 55 grade pitches.
Yep.
And sometimes it's changeup. I saw some nasty changeups in AAA. I don't think we've seen that changeup yet from him in the major leagues, but his curveball and fastball can get pretty good. But what you see from him is variety, and that variety is what's keeping hitters off balance. Same with Brady Singer. It's the variety that's keeping hitters off balance. If I were the Royals, I'd be teaching any pitcher who looks like he can pitch, who can throw a pitch, to throw that pitch. You would be working to develop as many as you possibly could, especially into different quadrants. And so I want a guy who can throw a slider and a changeup to go down and in and down and away and that sort of thing. I want multiple quadrants. I want as much movement from guys who can spin as possible, because this notion that and I'm talking about relievers too. I've had a conversation with Mike about this notion that the two pitch reliever is also very risky in some ways, unless both of those pitchers are dominant, because if they're not, they're going to eliminate your worst pitch on a day and just sit on whatever is not great. And so I would love to see them take these lessons to heart that they've learning from guys like Heasley and Singer and develop more pitches to be exceptional, or at the very least major league average.
Absolutely. And then Daniel Lynch, I know he got roughed up a little bit on, I think it was Tuesday night. I'm not worried about him at all. I think he's flashed enough a good potential that he's going to be just fine. Generally how I feel about all of these young pitchers, that I'm not going to be out on any of them until there is a coaching change at that specific role. And then if they're still not becoming the guys that we think we are, then I can make that decision. But I'm not making that decision until Cal Aldred is disposed of as the pitching coach.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, how else are we going to know what their actual potential is?
Exactly.
Until they get with somebody who has a proven track record of helping guys reach their potential, we really won't know what that crop of pitchers is. And honestly, there are more coming. I mean, Jackson Kowar is going to come back. Chris Bubich is going to come back. I'm really excited about Drew Parrish and what he's doing in Northwest Arkansas. You know, there are guys coming who are going to be asked to reach their potential as well. And we won't know until they get under a development system that is better at the major league level.
Yeah. And I believe I saw it somewhere that I believe Austin Cox was on the taxi squad for this game in Cleveland. And they have not announced a starter for Saturday. I believe that would be Zach Greinke's spot. So there could be a scenario where maybe Austin Cox makes his big league debut on Saturday between Singer and Heasley Friday and Sunday. So something to watch there. I have no sources on this, but just kind of reading the tea leaves a little bit, that could be the case, which I wouldn't hate. I mean, I think Austin Cox is a good pitcher. I think it's another guy from that 2018 class that can turn into something. So, and I don't think Jackson Kowar or Chris Bubich have shown enough to come back to the major league rotation quite yet. So give Austin Cox a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not actually the biggest or the highest on Austin Cox, but I would rather he come make a spot start probably than have Kowar come back up before he's ready, have Hernandez or Bubich come back up before they're ready. I don't know if the taxi squad means he's going to be there because they're coming back home for this Houston series. And so they're going to be right down the road from Omaha. They can grab pretty much anybody they want. But and from Northwest Arkansas, honestly, if they just to stir up some stuff, I went ahead and tweeted out, let's bring up Drew Parrish for this.
Hey, I don't hate that either. He's been shoving for the last month. He's been awesome.
Watch those starts in Double A, and they are a thing of beauty. His last one was probably his worst start of this stretch of good starts he had. He still didn't allow any runs because he's an unconventional pitcher in some ways because he gives up a lot of fly ball outs, but they don't hit the ball hard on him. They just don't. Nobody does. Doesn't strike out a ton of guys. He just misses barrels all over the place. I would say when he's on, it's a 60 grade changeup and a 60 grade curveball. I love them both. The fastball is not that hard, but he has much better command than say a Carlos Hernandez. So I'm excited to see what he can do moving forward. Maybe you throw him up there. It depends on a lot on like what you think of the person's makeup, right? Like, could he handle coming to the majors for one start, getting shelled, and then going back to Double A or going to Triple A? If he could, I might just see what I had and give it a shot. You know, you're 16 and what, 31, 32?
16 and 33.
33. What's it matter? Let's see what happens.
That's kind of where I'm at. I love Drew Parrish. I think that's a guy that just knows how to pitch. There is something to just, like, there's something awesome about watching a dude blow 98 by guys with regularity, but there's something to 90 to 92 that you just know how to get it by guys and just make it work. So now we're at our weekly segment where we're looking for Vinny Pasquantino on a milk carton here in Kansas City. I'm going to bring him up on every episode he is in the big leagues. I swear to God.
That's what the people want. You got to give them what they want.
We have started a revolution at Royals Farm Report to get this man to the big leagues. It's actually pretty, pretty awesome. But this week, homered in three straight, hit a lefty-lefty bomb last night, has 15 on the year, 52 RBIs, is at over 300. OPS is over 1,000. People know how good he is at this point.
Amazing. By the way,
it simply is amazing. And I had the take earlier before the season started that he was going to get called up before Prado. I still feel good about that. Would you be shocked? Okay. I'll put it this way, because I would be shocked if he is called up for the game tomorrow, or I guess on Friday against Houston. What percent chance do you give it that on Friday he is with the big league club?
I'd say about 15. It's not nothing. It's not zero. You know, they're feeling the pressure the same as everybody else. I think what hurts the Royals is they come out and they make these statements like he needs this many plate appearances in Double A and High A, and then that you kind of feel compelled to stick to those numbers. Like, you kind of feel compelled to be like, well, now he's got to hit that number before we let him up here, or what are we, a bunch of liars, you know? Like, and so I don't like that they do that. Like, just say, no, he's not ready. He needs to work on stuff. You know, it's not true, but you know, at least it's vague. So you can get out of it whenever you want.
If you're going to lie, at least be vague about it.
Exactly. And so, like, I put it at 15%. I think we're coming up to July. Like, it's June 1st today. You know, we have a month left and before people start really turning on the hot stove for the trade deadline, I think. And so, you know, what's the point of keeping Carlos Santana? I know they're trying to still build up his value. I know this all blah, 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 yada, 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 all that stuff. But I just don't know, man. They DFA'd Chris Owings after a certain period of time, knowing that they had nothing there for him the year that he was having a Santana-like season. I just got to imagine he's got to be gone because those two fates are tied together. It's not like they're bringing up Vinny Pasquantino if Carlos Santana is still on the team. They're not doing that, at least not for a significant period of time. And so I give it 15%, 15% that they wise up and drop the pretenses and just do what needs to be done.
The optimist in me says about 25%. Because at a certain point, man, like the Royals are following the sunk cost fallacy with Carlos Santana. Like we are paying him to be our first baseman is the biggest crock of shit. it just is, right? Like at a certain when that article that Lynn Worthy put out that's that opposing scouts are looking at the Royals going, why are they putting him in the lineup every day?
Oh yeah.
Like why is Carlos Santana still here? Like that is embarrassingly bad.
Yeah.
And I don't want to trash Carlos Santana. Because
he's had a great career up to this point. You can't really say like when he was a bad baseball player.
And when the Royals signed him, I loved it. I was like, yes, this is perfect. 2-year deal. You can get ready for Prado and Pasquantino for 23. Well, at a certain point, you got like Pasquantino is forcing the hand of the Royals. He just is. I don't want to believe that they really think he's not ready. I know that I am not I am a random dude with a microphone and I've done some prospect evaluation in the past and I follow the Royals minor leagues for the last few years, but I don't know what I'm missing. If you think he's not ready, you can sell me on Prado's not ready. You can. Mm-hmm. He's certainly seeing a lot of pitches. He's walking more now, but he's still striking out a lot. So he's still missing pitches in the zone that he can hammer. When he gets his pitch in the zone, he hammers it, but he's got to get there. I don't know what Vinny's missing. He's striking out as much as he's walking. He's hitting the ball for a lot more power now. He's getting to his power more than he has in the past. And it's not like he's doing it with a super happy fun juice ball like the guys were doing last year. What am I missing? No, what are we missing at this point? I don't get it. I don't.
It's really not what you can tell. It's not what you're missing and it's not what I'm missing and it's not what the Royals fan base is missing when opposing scouts are also like, he's ready. Right? Like it can't be the industry consensus and the fan consensus that this guy's ready. And then we're just the ones who are wrong. It's just so unlikely especially when you talk about how frequently the Royals misevaluate their own players, you know, that or misvaluate, especially like, yes. And so I think they think he's ready too. I don't think that they're like, oh, he's not ready. Actually. I think they think he's ready. I think it's just, they're trying to do that thing that they often do, that sunk cost thing where they can't let that $10.5 million go. And it's like, guys, it's spent anyway. No matter what happens, that money is spent. You think somebody's taken that $10.5 million from you on that contract?
Heck no.
You are dreaming. That is never going to happen. Even if you trade Carlos Santana, which won't happen, by the way, you're going to have to eat a lot of that $10.5 million.
About 8 of it.
Oh, yeah. Just about at least if you get lucky enough for someone to do that, which they won't do. Right. Why? Because he's not Jorge Soler, because he's 5 or 6 years older than Jorge Soler, because his secondary numbers don't look as good as Jorge Soler's did, even though and because he's not going to turn it around like Jorge Soler did. Everybody knew Jorge Soler was a streaky hitter. Everybody knew that at some point he would make an adjustment, flip the switch and go gangbusters. And that's what he did. And he did it, but it was very expected. There was nobody who was like, he forgot how to hit completely. No, it's just, he needed to adjust some things. And then he was going to get streaky hot. Like he always did. Carlos Santana is 36 years old. This has nothing to do with being a streaky hitter. He's really not a streaky hitter. He's a very patient, very, you know, he controls the zone well. He's not the type of dude who streaks. He's the type of dude whose bat has just slowed down, whose ability to make hard contact with the ball has waned. I worried that this would happen before they signed him or when they signed him, but I got half a good season of good stuff out of him. And then the bat went. And that was a predictable as the sun rising in the morning. I didn't hate the signing because I thought they'd be willing to say it's $10.5 million the second year. Who cares? And it shouldn't matter to them, honestly.
It shouldn't.
But it shouldn't. It should not matter to them. But for some reason it does, and it's keeping Vinny Pasquantino, who is entirely ready, down in AAA.
I think he's going to be up at some point this homestand.
That'd be awesome.
I think he will be. For fan
attendance at the very least, right? If they care a ton about like getting fans reinterested in this team, bring him up for this series. Like this is a long homestand. Bring him up. You're playing the Astros.
You're going to get your ass kicked.
Oh yeah.
Just bring him up and let him roll.
And maybe he's a spark and you win a few of these games and fans get excited again.
Exactly. It's that easy. I've said it for months that the Royals are going to be better when they just decide to go full youth movement. When you get Bobby and Vinny and MJ and Kyle Isbell and Nick Prado all in the same lineup, I think the Royals are going to be better off than they are right now.
I don't understand when they're like, when people are like, oh, it's a dichotomy between playing for the future or playing for right now. No, it isn't. Like, those are the same decisions. Playing the young players is better for right now. Like,
exactly.
It's also better for the future. It just so happens they're at a point where playing for the future and playing right now, the same actions, they all align perfectly. Like, whoosh, it all aligns at firing Cal Eldred, bringing up Vinny Prascantino, Nick Prado, you know, playing Kyle Isbell more frequently, all these sorts of things. Like, it just, these things align. Whether you want to win now or whether you want to play for the future, they're all, it's all the same moves, Dayton. You're just not making them for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we got a couple more topics to hit here. Before we get into that, we have our segment with Keona Sinks from the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum to talk about what's coming up there over the next few weeks. All right, Keona. So we are getting ever closer to Buck O'Neill's induction in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. How has the preparation for that been going?
It's going well. We're going to be announcing a substantial fundraising opportunity that the public can help support the museum as we not only celebrate, but obviously raise money for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. What a year and what a primetime opportunity for Kansas City nationally and long overdue. But Buck gets to finally take his rightful place into the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I can't wait. I know, but Bob's speech is going to be an all-timer. I cannot wait. If he's the one speaking, which I assume that he is, I'm very excited for what that's gonna entail.
For sure. I think for us, you know, you look back, you reflect 15 years ago, and just, you know, obviously it would have been great for him to be with us to share the news that we just received in December. But definitely, you know, I think for him, his museum and being nationally in the spotlight is what he ultimately would want and what he would have done in 06. And so, as you mentioned, I mean, so many people outside the museum and including our family and local people here in Kansas City, is such an exciting time. And then, of course, we'll end this later this year with the Kansas City Hall of Fame Buck O'Neill Gala in support of the museum as well. In honor of Buck's birthday, which he always used to raise money for the museum. And so just a lot of different preparations and different nuanced things, but definitely we'll be announcing some exciting plans in terms of how people can support the museum in this effort as well.
That's awesome. So speaking of the museum, it sounds like there's a new exhibit coming to the museum for those that haven't been recently. What do we have going on there?
Yeah, Black Baseball in Living Color. Greg Kreinler, renowned artist, supporter of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. We originally had this exhibit back in 2020. And of course, like everything, the pandemic forced us to close. And so not a lot of people were able to view the exhibit here at the museum inside the Changing Gallery, but we brought it back. It launched, I think, back in February and March-ish. So, people can come and see it here on display. A lot of different portraits. Really cool because Greg really took a lot of the art and a lot of the portraits of Negro League players and really colorized them, which is so difficult to do given back then not a lot of portraits of players were true color.
Right.
And so he sat down and, I mean, I can't even tell you how many of the players that he went back and did a lot of research on. And really were able to bring the art to life and the players. And so they're on display here until later this summer. People have an opportunity to come and visit. It's free, open during regular business hours for the museum. And so we're just grateful and thankful for Greg's support. Obviously, the work that he does. If you don't know who he is, I would highly encourage people to look him up. He's a pretty big fish and known for painting deceased baseball players, but also paying homage to the game with his art and his work. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's going to be super exciting. If you have not been out to the museum, please definitely go check that out. It's going to be a really cool, really cool exhibit that's on display right now. We still got a couple months till this is coming up. I know that the team on the field that we're seeing right now with the Royals has obviously not been great, but they are going to be donning the Kansas City Monarchs jerseys for a salute to the Negro Leagues when the Dodgers are in town. I believe it's at the end of August. How is the preparation for that? Do we know what year the uniforms are? Can you leak anything? Or
I can't leak anything. Well, what I can say is going to be a great season. Hopefully, the Royals will bring us a W for that day. Of course, for those who do not know, this has been a celebration and a salute in honor of the Negro Leagues over the past 10 years, I believe, Joel, that they've been wearing a tribute Kansas City Monarchs, saluting the Negro Leagues. And then, of course, the worn jerseys for both teams, which we play the Dodgers here, will be auctioned for people to go and bid, and then those proceeds support the work that we do here at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. But it's always such a fun day, and I know last year was pretty epic with that walk-off in those Kansas City Monarch uniforms, and so was very grateful to see that. And now with everything going on with baseball, hopefully we can bring some of that back to the K to get a win.
You can't lose in the Monarchs jerseys. It just can't happen. It just can't.
It wouldn't be a good thing.
No. And I think it's so cool, too, with this being the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson's breaking the color barrier. They're playing the Dodgers. So it's one of those, like, how can you not be romantic about baseball sort of moments. Do you have a favorite Monarchs jersey that they've worn over the last few years? I think last year's, like, that style with the red and the kind of the off-white, I think is certainly one of my favorites.
It's hard. I think last year, I have to go back and find it, but they put a social media poll out of the tributes, you know, over the years of which jerseys and caps. And it's hard because you look at all of them and you're like, man, like, these are amazing. But to your point, the pinstripe red with the white cream from last year's, it was beautiful. The caps, everything that came together for the tribute. And so I'd be curious to see, given the 75th anniversary of Jackie's breaking of the color barrier, and how Kansas City obviously played a huge role in that historically with his start with Monarchs. And then obviously 47, he goes and breaks the color barrier with the Dodgers. And so it's going to be pretty cool to see Jackie versus Jackie, essentially. But hopefully we can get a W and beat the Dodgers here in Kansas City.
I sure hope so. I really hope so. I'm going to try and get out to that day. And I'm glad that it's a little later in the year. When I was in college, I always wanted to go to the game whenever I would come back from the semester, but it was always during dead week right before finals. So I haven't been able to get there when they've worn the Monarch jerseys. I'm going to make an effort to do it this year. I have to.
You have to. You have to come, give us some good luck, and hopefully we can get a W.
Yeah, I'll wear my Kansas City Monarchs jersey that I have for the club that's just down the street from me, and hopefully I'll wear my 42 cap, and we'll call it good. Well, thank you so much, Keona, and we'll talk to you here in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Joe.
So one of the cooler stories this week, when the Royals were in Cleveland, there was a bevy of roster moves. I'm not even going to try and get into all of them because it was overwhelming, and I was looking for a long Italian name, and it wasn't theirs. So I was kind of pissed. But of a couple of the Gabe Spire, Matt Peacock were on the injured list, and one of the guys was brought up was Jose Kwas, who has spent the last couple of years in the Royals organization, was the closer on the AA Northwest Arkansas team last year that won the Texas League title. If you don't know his story, it's incredible. It's one of those how can you not be romantic about baseball sort of stories. He starts off as a shortstop and couldn't hit, just didn't quite make it. So he converts to a pitcher in 2017. Gets released in 2018, and goes home and works with his little brother, and he gets a job at FedEx working 14-hour days. On the day when he would get home at 8 o'clock, they live in Brooklyn, New York. They would go out to the park right across the street from their house, where there's one stoplight or street light, and they would go and just pitch and throw and do all of these things trying to get him back. He ends up signing with the Royals, and now he made his big league debut yesterday through a scoreless inning and got his first big league strikeout. How friggin' awesome is that? Like, it's incredible. Though that's why you love this sport, is for stories like that.
Yeah, just one of those sort of all-timers make a movie kind of things about it, really. I mean, they basically made a movie about this. It's called The Rookie. They made it back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like,
great
transpose
movie,
that story, except instead of teaching high school and coaching baseball, the guy worked delivering packages. I never delivered. I did work, used to work for UPS, sorting packages in a hub. Let me tell you, it is not easy. It is awful. And so, that's the hard road to Major League Baseball right there. But you have to just love it for him, for his family. Think about what it changes for his family to be able to play in the major leagues for any period of time at all, but even an extended period of time, hopefully. And honestly, as a pitcher, he's a lot of what you've wanted the Royals to do over the past few years, right? I think Randy Cesarelli talks often about how they need to supplement their bullpen with guys who look different, with guys who throw differently, so that they can change things up as they're coming through. So yeah, maybe he's only ever going to pitch one inning at a time, but if it's one lights out inning, totally fine, right? Like, and you love seeing that sidewinder, you know, fastball from him, that 95 mile an hour heat he put across from down low was pretty impressive on that strikeout. And so love to see him pitch. I've watched him a little bit in AAA. It's just a fun motion to watch. It's fun to watch guys wonder why they can't hit it when they're done. Like, mm-hmm. it's fun to watch guys take that cut that's like, where, how'd the ball get through my bat there? Like, you know, it's because that ball's got late rise to it, and the guys are just gonna have a ton of trouble hitting it, righties especially. Imagine being a righty trying to hit that fastball slider combo is gonna be a nightmare for righty. Oh, yeah,
that sinker that he throws looks like it's starting at your front hip, mm-hmm. like from where he throws, and that, like, it's not quite submarine, but it's not sidearm, like it's somewhere in between. Yeah. And yeah, like that funk is what makes him effective. And to be able to hone that in and learn how to pitch, I think that's the craziest part of it, is that he just started doing that. And I'm sure it was messing around one day, trying to learn how to pitch, and he just did it and it worked. And then you just go from there. And I hope that he sticks, because I think he has a chance to. It's not like it's Sergio Romo throwing up like little, you know, slider after slider after slider with no fastball. It's 95 to 97 with sink into righties. With, if you haven't seen his slider, I mean, he just makes guys look foolish with it, especially when it's going into lefties. And I didn't know a lot about him last year, even, to be honest, when he went between high A and double A, I believe. And he was in double A at the end of the year, and he was the closer. And over at Royals Farm Report at our previous site, where we were hosting our podcast, we had on Nicholas Batters, who's the play-by-play guy at Northwest Arkansas, and Vinny. And they both said, hey, you can't talk about this team without talking about Jose Quas. He was absolutely lights out for us at the end of that year. He was amazing. Like, he deserves all the credit in the world. And at that point, I was like, oh, okay. Got some run in spring training, goes to AAA, and you're seeing him put up some numbers. And it's like, oh, this dude, I hope he gets his chance. He was a guy that I was hoping would get called up at some point. I didn't know the full story, but now that I do, I'm rooting for him even harder, and I hope he stays around as long as possible.
Yeah, read the profile Alec Lewis did of him in The Athletic earlier in the year. It was like during spring training or right at the start of the season. Alec Lewis did an excellent profile. One thing that Alex is really great at is getting to stories that are different in some way. And he really touched the root of that story. I love it. But he mentioned, I think, that he was an infielder, I think, before he became a pitcher.
He was a shortstop. And
that sidearm motion was one that he would routinely do as part of, you know, infielders sometimes throw sidearm for different reasons. It's a more natural throwing motion for some of them. Some of them it's a part of the turning double plays and things like that. And so that's where he went as a pitcher, because they thought, like, okay, this is going to make me different, you know, like, and it really did. It really worked out. You have to applaud not only him, but his brother, who helped him put in that time. And I'm sure he'll thank his brother in multiple ways. But kudos to both of them for finding a second life in baseball, because I bet it was dark on some of those days at FedEx when you thought, I bet that was real dark. But you know what? You fight through it, you make it to the major leagues.
I can't imagine. So one last baseball topic, and then we'll get out of here. What would you consider a successful season at this point for the Royals? I think the season's lost. I hate saying that on June 1st, but
that's
when
true.
You're 17 games below 500 at this point, unless they go on some miraculous run, which I don't foresee. We're looking at probably a top five pick. We're looking dangerously close to 100 losses. What do you consider successful at this point?
Well, I'm going to measure success not at all in terms of the wins and losses of the major league team. Like, that just doesn't even, I would never even start thinking about that at this point. I wouldn't have done that even before the season started, because if they had managed to like scrape together 78 wins on the back of career years from like Carlos Santana and Whit Merrifield and stuff like that, I wouldn't feel better about the team or anything like that. So to me, a successful year looks like a few things. One, young guys staying healthy. That's sort of number one for me. Young guys staying relatively healthy throughout the year. And then two, steps forward from all of them, right? So by that measure, they're all doing really great so far. I'm very happy with how the season is going by that measure. I want to see Vinny Pascantino in the major leagues before too long. I want to see what he does for the rest of the season. I'll be sort of planning that. But when the end of the year gets here, I'm going to look at their 40-man roster and I'm going to say, can I find 26 guys on here who can put together a 500 season next year. If I can say yes to that, I'm calling it a successful season. Maybe I can't say find all 26. Maybe there's a pitcher or two that needs to be added. Maybe there's a position player or that needs to be added somewhere. But I think if I can look on there and find a decent number of guys, 24 to 26, who look like they can be a 500 or competitive baseball team, I'm happy with how the season turned out.
I think we're pretty much in lockstep there. I think it's going to be whenever they decide to just go full youth movement, which I think will come at some point, when they decide to cut bait with players that are not big league caliber, whether that's veteran or middling guy that's been around for a little bit. And you can exactly think of who I'm inferring when it comes to that. I think they're going to be a lot better, and it's going to be just getting those guys experience is really how I'm measuring success at this point. I can't look at it any other way. If they lose 102 games, God forbid, but they are getting Bobby, MJ, Nick, Vinny, and Kyle, and maybe Everett Olivares in there right with regularity. Not going to expect every day, but with regularity, then I'll at least feel a little bit better going into 23, knowing those guys have at least gotten their feet wet. MJ and Bobby have essentially cut their teeth for a full big league season. You're heading into another full season for Lynch and Kowar and Bubich and Singer with Brad Keller and maybe Zach Greinke still in the mix. And some others that maybe get their chance, like a Drew Parrish and Austin Cox, John Heasley, Carlos Hernandez. You know, I think you'll feel a little better going into next year that I don't think they're going to compete like we all thought they might in 23 with the way the season has fallen. But you at least feel a little better about the cohesion of all of these young guys now coming together to start that next movement next year. It's certainly a year behind now. But if we can start at least head in that direction, there's at least a direction. And I think that's what I want. I think that's the crux of what I'm trying to get to, is there is a direction for where this team is heading.
I think there is one. I think you can see it now. It's just we're moving so slowly in that direction. You know, we as a fan base are ready for that to speed up considerably so that we can see the type of exciting baseball that's going to ultimately win us games eventually, hopefully. Right. And I'm telling you, like, I know fans, if you're listening to this show, you're probably a diehard. You're probably somebody who's really into the Royals and you're not going to stop watching them. Don't. And here's why. Eventually, when all this stuff ends up happening, they are going to start winning some games. It's going to get exciting at different stretches throughout this year. It's going to. When we see Kyle Isbell and Edward Olivares in an outfield together, when we see Vinny Pascantino and Nick Prado and MJ Melendez all in a lineup together with Salvador Perez and things like that, and Brady Singer's on the mound pitching that day, and, you know, whatever, and Dylan Coleman is coming out of the bullpen and these sorts of things, that's going to be an exciting game to watch. Yep. And those stretches of seeing that lineup are going to be exciting. Are they going to win all those games? Of course not. They're still young. They're still adjusting. But that's the type of baseball that I want to see. And I think it's going to be exciting for the time moving forward after they make the changes that everybody sort of wants them to make.
Yeah, I hope that's coming soon, because it's going to make this podcast a hell of a lot more interesting, and I don't have to dive. I don't have to do a deep dive for content or deep dive for positivity. I can at least go there. Marcus, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Before we get out of here, do you have any final thoughts? And this could be anything. It doesn't have to be baseball related. It doesn't have to be whatever. What do you got?
Any final thoughts? Yes, I do. So I'm about to go to New Orleans on Friday. So one of the things that I want to mention, I'm trying to get everything done for work in order to like make it okay for me to go on vacation for a week and a half, you know. As I was running around constantly today, I thought to myself, man, you haven't had a day off since you started this job back in July, right? And I just want to stress the importance of like doing what is necessary to take care of your mind. I know you're big into promoting the importance of mental health, Joel, and I love hearing that from everybody. People, do what is important to protecting your own ability to be happy and find joy on a given day. I'm going to New Orleans. That's going to give me some joy, right? But I also decided that I'm taking tomorrow off too, before I leave, to pack and make everything perfect. I'm going to go hang out with my brother and my nephew. I'm not a wise person by any stretch of the imagination, but I've been working long enough now to know that we can let those sorts of things, the daily grinds of work, the daily grinds of watching a baseball team that loses way too frequently, we can let those things sort of weigh on us a little bit. And it's like, find those things that help you get out of that funk. Find those things that pull you back together. For me, it's playing FIFA or playing Zelda and like zonking for a minute or laying down and, you know, just breathing deeply. But I just hope that listening to your podcast and things like that, that's what I do when I play FIFA. I turn the sound off and I listen to podcasts. And so if it's listening to this podcast, I hope it brings you a little bit of joy. I hope it lightens the load on you from your daily work habits, because that's, to me, the reason I started a podcast, so that when people are commuting or at work or doing the shit that they don't want to do, maybe things get a little easier for them.
Yeah. So mine's going to be along the same vein of like mental health and stuff. And it's June 1st now. Mental Health Awareness Month was in May, but the conversation doesn't end. And as you can see the shirt, if you're watching on YouTube, I'll move my camera down just a little bit. The shirt, this is Strength Isn't Always Physical. This is from the New York Giants, or from the New York Giants, the San Francisco Giants. This is the shirt that Drew Robinson wears. If you've read his story at all, definitely go do it. Gabe Kapler has worn this in interviews. Drew Robinson is a mental health awareness, basically coach for the San Francisco Giants. And they started selling these shirts recently for just for people to buy. They started selling them in the pro shop with the San Francisco Giants, and they made them for sale for everybody, for anybody that wants one. And I reached out, and I sent the email to gameused@sfgiants.com and asked to buy one. And it was $40 for the shirt, for plus, you know, and that included shipping. And that $40 goes to Drew Robinson's Foundation for Mental Health Awareness and Advocacy. So if you're looking to send money to a good cause for whatever, you know, or you know, someone needs this shirt, something like that. You know, I would talk about all the time. One of the quotes that I live by right now with my own mental health is recover loudly so that no one suffers quietly. And so that, you know, that I'm always there for people. It's just an outward expression of I may be not my best self whenever, but you're not alone. You may not be your best self, but you're not alone. So it kind of goes along that. So strength isn't always physical. Being strong is, you know, between the ears as well. So I hope that, you know, you guys maybe see the shirt and you buy one. If you do, please reach out to me. We'll find a way to, I'll talk to Tuck and BJ. Maybe we'll get you some KCSN merch. If you buy this shirt, send me a DM and we'll figure it out. But I wanted to wear this on the podcast for that reason tonight. Marcus, thank you again so much for coming on. Be sure to subscribe to their podcast, Royals Weekly. It's a really good show. I've listened to it a few times. It's a lot of fun, and follow any Royals content that's out there. So thank you so much. Absolutely. We will talk to you guys next week.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.